Random House Audiobooks presents The Universe in a Nutshell by Stephen Hawking. Read for you by Simon Preble. I hadn't expected my popular book, A Brief History of Time, to be such a success. It was on the London Sunday Times bestseller list for over 4 years, which is longer than any other book has been, and remarkable for a book on science that was not easygoing. After that, people kept asking when I would write a sequel. I resisted because I didn't want to write Son of Brief History or A Slightly Longer Brief History of Time, and because I was busy with research. But I've come to realize that there is room for a different kind of book that might be easier to understand. A Brief History of Time was organized in a linear fashion, with most chapters following and logically depending on the preceding chapters. This appealed to some readers, but others got stuck in the early chapters and never reached the more exciting material later on. By contrast, the present book is more like a tree. Chapters 1 and 2 form a central trunk from which the other chapters branch off. The branches are fairly independent of each other and can be tackled in any order after the central trunk. They correspond to areas I've worked on or thought about since the publication of A Brief History of Time. Thus, they present a picture of some of the most active fields of current research. Within each chapter, I've also tried to avoid a single linear structure. In 1988, when A Brief History of Time was first published, the ultimate theory of everything seemed to be just over the horizon. How has the situation changed since then? Are we any closer to our goal? As will be described in this book, we have advanced a long way since then. But it's an ongoing journey still, and the end is not yet in sight. According to the old saying, it is better to travel, hopefully, than to arrive. Our quest for discovery fuels our creativity in all fields, not just science. If we reached the end of the line, the human spirit would shrivel and die. But I don't think we'll ever stand still. We shall increase in complexity, if not in depth, and shall always be the center of an expanding horizon of possibilities. I want to share my excitement at the discoveries that are being made and the picture of reality that is emerging. I've concentrated on areas I've worked on myself for a greater feeling of immediacy. The details of the work are very technical, but I believe the broad ideas can be conveyed without a lot of mathematical baggage. I just hope I've succeeded. I've had a lot of help with this book. I would mention in particular Thomas Hertog and Neil Shearer for assistance with the figures, captions and boxes. Anne Harris and Kitty Ferguson, who edited the manuscript, or more accurately, the computer files, because everything I write is electronic. And Philip Dunn of the Book Laboratory and Moonrunner Design, who created the illustrations. But beyond that, I want to thank all those who have made it possible for me to lead a fairly normal life and carry on scientific research. Without them, this book could not have been written. Stephen Hawking, Cambridge, May the 2nd, 2001. Chapter 1. A Brief History of Relativity. How Einstein laid the foundations of the two fundamental theories of the 20th century, general relativity and quantum theory. Albert Einstein, the discoverer of the special and general theories of relativity, was born in Ulm, Germany, in 1879. But the following year, the family moved to Munich, where his father, Hermann, and uncle Jakob set up a small and not very successful electrical business. Albert was no child prodigy, but claims that he did poorly at school seem to be an exaggeration. In 1894, his father's business failed, and the family moved to Milan. His parents decided he should stay behind to finish school, but he didn't like its authoritarianism, and within months he left to join his family in Italy. He later completed his education in Zurich, graduating from the prestigious Federal Polytechnical School, known as the ETH, in 1900. His argumentative nature and dislike of authority did not endear him to the professors at the ETH, and none of them offered him the position of assistant, which was the normal route to an academic career. 2 years later, he finally managed to get a junior post at the Swiss Patent Office in Bern. It was while he held this job that in 1905 he wrote three papers that both established him as one of the world's leading scientists and started two conceptual revolutions. Revolutions that changed our understanding of time, space, and reality itself. Toward the end of the 19th century, scientists believed they were close to a complete description of the universe. They imagined that space was filled by a continuous medium called the ether. Light rays and radio signals were waves in this ether, just as sound is pressure waves in air. All that was needed for a complete theory were careful measurements of the elastic properties of the ether. In fact, anticipating such measurements, the Jefferson Lab at Harvard University was built entirely without iron nails, so as not to interfere with delicate magnetic measurements. However, the planners forgot that the reddish-brown bricks of which the lab and most of Harvard are built contain large amounts of iron. The building is still in use today, although Harvard is still not sure how much weight a library floor without iron nails will support. By the century's end, discrepancies in the idea of an all-pervading ether began to appear. It was expected that light would travel at a fixed speed through the ether, but that if you were travelling through the ether in the same direction as the light, its speed would appear lower, and if you were travelling in the opposite direction of the light, its speed would appear higher. Yet a series of experiments failed to support this idea. The most careful and accurate of these experiments was carried out by Albert Michelson and Edward Morley at the Case School of Applied Science in Cleveland, Ohio, in 1887. They compared the speed of light in two beams at right angles to each other. As the Earth rotates on its axis and orbits the Sun, the apparatus moves through the ether with varying speed and direction. But Michelson and Morley found no daily or yearly differences between the two beams of light. It was as if light always travelled at the same speed relative to where one was, no matter how fast and in which direction one was moving. Based on the Michelson-Morley experiment, the Irish physicist George Fitzgerald and the Dutch physicist Hendrik Lorentz suggested that bodies moving through the ether would contract and that clocks would slow down. This contraction and the slowing down of clocks would be such that people would all measure the same speed for light, no matter how they were moving with respect to the ether. Fitzgerald and Lorentz still regarded ether as a real substance. However, in a paper written in June 1905, Einstein pointed out that if one could not detect whether or not one was moving through space, the notion of an ether was redundant. Instead, he started from the postulate that the laws of science should appear the same to all freely moving observers. In particular, they should all measure the same speed for light, no matter how fast they were moving. The speed of light is independent of their motion and is the same in all directions. This required abandoning the idea that there is a universal quantity called time that all clocks would measure. Instead, everyone would have his or her own personal time. The times of two people would agree if the people were at rest with respect to each other, but not if they were moving. This has been confirmed by a number of experiments, including one in which two accurate clocks were flown in opposite directions around the world and returned showing very slightly different times. This might suggest that if one wanted to live longer, one should keep flying to the east so that the plane's speed is added to the Earth's rotation. However, the tiny fraction of a second one would gain would be more than cancelled by eating airline meals.